You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Daniel Weiner. Daniel, thanks so much for being with me today.
I'm glad to be here.
So, Daniel, what are you working on at the moment? What's happening in your studio or related to it?
I'm in my studio, and I have a show coming up at Leslie Heller Gallery in New York in September, which almost seems like a long time away, but in my world it seems pretty close at this point. I've been working on it for a couple of years, and even though I'm a sculptor mostly and really have been dedicated to three dimensions, right now I'm working on things that are more or less flat, and I've been working on them for a couple of years. Though I make them in a very sculptural way, and they all are faces of some kind or another. I never know how exactly to describe them.
Almost like masks, right? Almost like a
mask. Yeah. Yeah. But so you can tell it's a face almost right off the bat. There's always like sort of more or less two eyes, a nose, and a mouth, and hair, things like that. But they're much more kind of imaginative and relate to the kind of history of making things up around the face. So I'm not representing any person's face, and they really don't have anything to do with portraiture or realism. And up until 8 years ago, I was more or less an abstract sculptor. And I tend to think the division between abstraction and representation is kind of old-fashioned and doesn't really work anymore. But there's clearly a level of representation in these.
Right, so how did that change, you going from, because that is a big switch just in kind of content, right? Not just how you were working, but going from previous work to this more figurative work.
So
there was a shift there.
It was definitely a shift. I think in certain ways it was less of a shift in terms of what I was thinking about than maybe seemed that you'd see from the outside, because I was the kind of abstract artist that was much more about creating a lot of associations to things in the real world. I was not the kind of abstract artist that was, a non-objective abstract artist. So when you looked at my work before, when it was more ostensibly abstract, it would always be like, this reminds me of, this thing and this other thing. That kind of shift is a little less than people think. But I, when was it? About 8 years ago or 10 years ago, I kind of came to a crossroads. I'd like to finish a group of work and was trying to figure out exactly what to do next. And over a long period of time, I'd been drawing faces in my notebooks and trying to figure out ways to make a face with the kind of vocabulary that I was using as a sculptor at the time. And I don't know if other artists have talked about this, but I always feel like I have like two or three sort of sidelines going on, almost like I'm doing research, R&D.
Right. So let's talk about the materials of that, because I suppose that's like a materials also R&D, right? So, because there'll be images of this for people to see, but what's
okay.
the process that you're using in R&D, so to speak? Because that's what's unusual as well, right?
Yeah. So the end product is made out of something called Epoxy Sculpt, which is a brand name, Epoxy with an A, which is a clay-like material, so you can model it like clay. But it's a form of epoxy, so it has a catalyst. So when you mix two parts together, it hardens over time. So it hardens in 2 to 6 hours, let's say. So you work it like clay. But the entire process is I start, I make a clay tablet out of plasticine, which is a oil-based clay that never dries, that sculptors have used for a long period of time, I think since the Renaissance, and I carve into it. So basically I'm kind of like drawing into the clay with clay tools, making shapes in the clay. And then I make 2 molds from that. I take the first mold of it in a traditional way, and then I take a mold of the mold. So each base has kind of 2 versions. And then I press the epoxy sculpt into it. And so, you know, there'll be indentations that I press the clay into or the epoxy sculpt into. And the epoxy sculpt is a very, very nice material. I've been using it for about 20 years. Among other things, one of the things I really like about it is that the color is in the material. So a lot of sculpture that's done in color, you normally will, you know, make a form and then cover the form with color. But this, I'm using the color in a totally kind of immediate way. And since I'm using a mold, it's a little bit like printmaking. And I'm definitely...
And that there's a surprise in the end, right? It's always a bit of a surprise.
Well, there's both a surprise and in the end, and it's like a... I'm starting from the same thing. It's a mold, so that, you know, it creates the same forms with the end product. But the thing that I work on the most is to create variations from the same thing. So most people would use a mold to make an addition, you know, so the same object, but with 6 versions of it. I try to make, you know, a different thing of something with a lot of variation that looks very different. So I find people will see things from the same mold, and they'll have no idea that they're the same set of shapes that make it up, which is one of the things that I'm very interested in. You know, almost like the mold is a kind of DNA, you know. Well, and also it relates to faces, you know. We see thousands and thousands of faces, and it's very easy for us to recognize how one is different from another, even though, you know, really, you know, structurally, they're almost right. The same from one person to the next. So it's kind of riffing off of that kind of thing.
And what will happen at Leslie Heller exactly? How many pieces? And let's talk about how that show's coming together. What will that be there? And how are they hung, or what's happening?
These are, you know, they hang like paintings. They're a little bit, they're about 1 inch or 2 off the wall. And, they're quite thin. They have about 1/8 of an inch or 1/4 of an inch of depth. And I'll probably have about 12 of them. However, I've made about 60 or 70 already. So there's going to be a lot to choose from.
Hung as a group? Because you've hung them in groupings before, right? But this is a different approach, isn't it?
Well, I've kind of gone back and forth. So I've done, you know, with my 3D sculpture, and I've also done pieces that hang on the wall with a lot more relief in them. So they have like 10 inches of relief instead of just 1/8 of an inch. And they're kind of hung and displayed in a relatively traditional way in a gallery. And these will be hung more or less traditionally as paintings. So they won't be hung as a group. But I have been interested with the faces of putting them together in ensembles, and I've done it a couple of times. So I've done a group of, it was 120 faces. They were all from like 4 or 5 molds, all done with the same set of colors hanging. So it took up a space that was like 12 feet high by like 3 or 4 feet wide. So that has a kind of totally different feeling than a kind of singular painting.
Right. The singular ones is almost like singular figures. And like the way curators always talk about paintings talking to each other. And in this case, it will look like, it sounds like, a room full of figures that are speaking to one another.
Yeah, I like that idea. I do like that idea. But because I've mostly been a sculptor, I'm kind of have this feeling of a lot of things in painting are kind of a surprise to me. I mean, I've never, how long have I been working? Over 40 years. I will never have done a show or put a group of work together that are more or less flat.
And so when will the show open? This sounds like an exciting show to see.
I hope it is. It'll open September 4th. It's up for about 5 or 6 weeks. It's at the beginning of the season, on the Lower East Side.
And you said there's a lot of still R&D going on. So we talked a little about how these are built, and then there's your research and development, which is specifically
That was much more about how I came to start to make the faces. Kind of like I said, I was at a crossroads, and I actually made a decision to start making faces based on the fact that I'd been drawing them in my notebooks kind of randomly for decades. And I didn't really know why exactly. And I just decided to follow through with the idea. And originally, I think when I started, it was either just during the Bush administration or just afterwards, and pretty close to the beginning of the Great Recession. And so originally the idea was that I wanted to portray like the second tier of people in power, the kind of villains who are in power, who change the world in a very negative way, but we don't know their names. And I started doing that, and I'm just like not a topical artist, and I couldn't figure out a way to do it that wasn't caricature. I mean, for instance, I really have admired and really liked, and the idea in a way was based on Philip Guston's Poor Richard, his book of kind of caricatures and drawings of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew, and you know, his painting of Richard Nixon with his phlebitis. And, you know, I just love those. And I wanted to do something like that, but it's just not me. And then I ended up trying to figure out how I could make a face, because I didn't want it to be a caricature. I didn't want it to be a portrait. I wanted it to be sort of on the edge between a face and abstraction. And I just started drawing every day to figure out how I could do that. And then all of these works have come out of that. And basically all the faces that I make are made from units that are very simple. So circles and ovals and, you know, wavy lines and triangles and diamonds and things like that. So it has a kind of, you know, abstract vocabulary that makes up the face. And I also just got interested in how, how do I put it? I mean, I realized that they were really kind of, trying to think of another word than representation, but a way to show demons, and that they were much more psychological and kind of like about like the negative, difficult, twisted, overly emotional parts of my psychology and of our psychology, which is, that's why I think there's a kind of unity between the work before this and this work, because it's kind of been my theme all along.
Right. Well, that's exciting. So how many pieces will end up in the show in total from all that you have, do you think?
Somewhere, less than 20, probably. No, it's not going to be crowded. I'm going to pick out the ones that sort of like, you know, sing or speak in some, you know, greater and more profound and particular way.
Well, it's great talking to you. Go on. Yeah, it'll have what?
No, but I'll have a lot left over in case somebody else wants to show them.
Right. Well, it's great talking to you about the show. Look forward to seeing it. And I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment? The last question I always ask.
Oh, cool. I just read The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson. And read a bunch of interviews by her and listened to a podcast where she was talking. I don't know, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, book? I am. Yeah, good book.
And I really liked it, and it was kind of, you know, I'm a 64-year-old straight white man, and there's a lot of, well, I mean, what's interesting to me is my work has always been not binary. I mean, the things that I like in the world are, like, not oppositional. They're more like categories slipping into each other. And just the way she's talking about that with gender in a very contemporary way was very interesting and, you know, also challenging given who I am.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the choices I made. So it was a very good experience. I actually read it with somebody else, and we spent a lot of time talking about it and thinking about it.
Well, Daniel, thanks so much for talking with me today, and good luck with your show.
Thank you.
And thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.